Robert Wagoner joins us. His latest works, of course, include Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple. He also has one called Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. And we'll talk about dreams when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Robert Wagoner back with us. He was last with me 4 years ago when we were talking about his work, Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple, and Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self. He taught himself a very simple method to become lucid or consciously aware of the dream state back in 1975, and then 6 years before the scientific evidence for lucid dreaming emerged. That's pretty good. And during the next 40-plus years, he explored lucid dreaming, discovered a way to directly connect with a knowledgeable and creative inner awareness. And besides his two acclaimed books on lucid dreaming, he co-edits online magazines. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Robert, you're away too long.
George, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You too. How have you been?
Great, great. Thanks.
How are the dreams?
You know, dreams take us deep and different places, so they're always fascinating.
They really are. And, you know, the old adage that everybody dreams all the time, you just don't remember them. Is that true?
It really is true. Every night we spend about 23% of the sleep time in the dream state. And when you start to do the numbers, you realize that if that's the case, after 11 years of living, you've spent one entire year in the dream state. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of us who are in our 40s, and we've spent 4 years in the dream state, and we still don't understand it very well. So it's amazing that we spend that much time in dreaming but really don't understand it.
There are different kinds of dreams, of course, precognitive dreams, regular dreams, nightmare dreams and stuff, and then, of course, lucid dreaming. What is it that makes lucid dreaming different from the other kinds?
Yeah, so a lucid dream is any dream in which you realize within the dream that you're dreaming. You know this is a dream. In fact, you might even announce in the dream, hey, this is a dream. This is too weird. This must be a dream. And so a lucid dream means that you realize you know you're dreaming, and therefore you can begin to act as you want. You can direct the dream to some degree. You can direct your actions within the dream.
Do you say something like, oh, this is a dream. I know it's a dream. I can't get hurt. I can jump off this building. Watch. Do they do stuff like that?
Exactly. Once you realize it's a dream, you can fly through space. You can go through walls. You can walk on water. You can do magic like Harry Potter. You can do some amazing things. But there's also some really deep and profound things that you can do as well.
Just my luck for someone to jump off a building and then say, it's not a dream, you made a mistake.
You know, for lucid dreamers, we have something we call the reality check. And so if you're ever wondering, wait a second, this seems really real. Is this a dream or is this waking reality? So lucid dreamers perform a reality check. For example, I might look at my left hand and grab my index finger and start pulling it.
Mm-hmm.
And if my index finger starts growing and growing and growing, then I know, hey, this is a dream. This would only happen in the dream state.
Exactly.
And so that's how you do a reality check, just to be sure that you are.
That's a good point.
In the dream state.
Robert, why do we lucid dream in the first place? What's the benefit of doing that?
You know, I think there's really about five benefits of lucid dreaming. The first one is you get to have so much fun, but you can also access creativity. You can connect with that unconscious mind, the unconscious creativity, and you can call forth solutions to problems, creative things that you want to produce or play. So that'd be the first one. The second one is you can use lucid dreaming for psychological insight, and also for emotional healing. A lot of people need to get in touch with their emotions and have healing occur, and so lucid dreaming allows for that. Then you can use it for physical healing. There's some extraordinary stories of people who have become lucidly aware and then focused on healing their body. And finally, you can use it to enhance your waking life skills, whatever those might be, and you can also use it for spiritual growth, for seeking out wisdom, exploring time and space. So those are some of the many deeper benefits of lucid dreaming.
And when somebody's in this dream and they know it, can they also control what they're doing, or are they just a witness to what's happening?
Yeah, you know, this is a little bit complex. The the metaphor that I use is the sailor does not control the sea, neither does the lucid dreamer control the dream. And so when you become lucidly aware, you can decide what you want to do and you can influence things, but it doesn't always go according to plan. And so sometimes you realize that the unconscious is trying to draw your attention to something or bringing in an unexpected feature that you did not expect. And when you see that, then you realize that to say control is just too big a word. You can influence, you can manipulate, but control, that might be a little bit too much.
Robert, where do dreams originate? Do they come from, the subconscious mind or the brain, the physical brain?
Boy, that's a deep philosophical question.
Sure
and
is.
A scientific one that people are still playing with. But it's the fact that every night we spend about 2 hours, 2.5 hours in the dream state. And also, all mammals dream. And that's another curious thing. Well, why is dreaming so important? Well, way back in decades ago, they did studies where they stopped mice from dreaming that allow them to eat, that allow them to sleep. But every time they started to dream, they'd wake them up. And within a week or so, I believe the mice in this laboratory experiment passed away.
Wow,
so
really?
Dreaming is somehow very important.
To your health.
But we still don't know exactly why we dream to begin with.
I know I used to have some Labrador retrievers, and when they were sleeping, you could tell they were dreaming because, they would just make these funny little noises and... You mean you just knew that they were dreaming of something. So I assume animals dream too then.
Yes, animals dream too. And the wonderful thing about some of the neurological research is that they're starting to almost be able to focus on the brain cells that get activated in certain types of dreams. So for example, if they teach a rat how to go through a maze to get to the food, then they can follow its brain activity at night and see that the rat is actually considering that same idea in its actual dream. And so when you see your Labrador move its paws or whatever, then you realize that sometimes they're having dreams about actual movements that they've done and things that they want to do.
Robert, has science jumped in on this yet?
You know, the wonderful thing is lucid dreaming has been scientifically validated through the wonderful work of Stephen LaBerge, who was at Stanford. And this is how he did it, George. He himself was a lucid dreamer, but he wondered how could you get scientific evidence. And then he realized that within the dream state, we have rapid eye movement, so our eyes move around. He wondered, could you bring a lucid dreamer into the sleep lab and tell him, when you become consciously aware that you're in a dream, I want you to look left and right 8 times, and maybe that'll move your physical eyes, and that will show evidence that you're consciously aware in the dream. And so using himself as the research subject, he went to the sleep lab and did that and published the results in 1980, 1981, and that ushered in the scientific era of lucid dreaming. But before then, lucid dreaming had been discussed in Buddhism as dream yoga for about 2,000 years, in Sufism for about 1,000 years, in shamanic traditions for many, many millennia. So it's a wonderful thing to have lucid dreaming be scientifically validated because it has a long history as an ancient spiritual practice.
It's not astral projection, though, is it?
No, it really isn't. And so I'll just kind of go through the differences between what people call OBEs or out-of-bodies or astral travel versus lucid dreams.
Okay.
So in a lucid dream, you realize, wait a second, this is too weird. This must be a dream. But normally in out-of-body, when you read about the experiences, the person has a traumatic accident or a heart attack and they're floating up in the hospital operating room, or they might begin to hear all this humming and buzzing as they're trying to fall asleep and that sort of thing. So people who are having out-of-bodies, they report that kind of buzzing and energetic noise. Sometimes they say that they roll out of their body or they shoot out of their body. But again, a lucid dreamer, they're just realizing within a dream that they're dreaming. I remember Robert Monroe, kind of the father of
astral projection.
Experience.
That's right.
Yeah, he said that he thought the big difference was that in the lucid dreams, people are constantly changing the environment. You know, you can use your beliefs and expectations, your mind, to change the environment around you. He says, whereas a person in the out-of-body experience, they just accept the environment. It's a very stable environment. And finally, the final point would be, a lot of people who have out-of-body experiences or astral travel, they report coming back to the body, and oftentimes with a big thud, and they kind of, when they finally reconnect. But lucid dreamers, they normally realize the dream's coming to an end, and then they just wake up in bed. So those are the differences. They're similar in some regards, but in many respects, they're two different things.
What is it that got you involved in lucid dreaming to study?
Yeah, you know, when I was a young kid, I just had a fascination with dreams. I occasionally have precognitive dreams that just blew my mind. But it was back in 1975, I was reading a book by Carlos Castaneda where he talked about his shamanic teacher suggested that he find his hands in the dream state and realize he's dreaming. And I thought, could a person really do that? And so there wasn't really a technique, so I just made up my own using the power of suggestion. Each night before I'd go to sleep, I'd just look at the palm of my hands while telling myself, tonight in my dreams, I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. Tonight in my dreams, I'll see my hands and realize I'm dreaming. And I'd do that for about 5 minutes and fall asleep. So what happened on the third night of doing this practice, I'm walking through my high school hallway, and all of a sudden, my hands just pop right in front of my face. And I realize, oh, this is a dream. And so this is the way that I taught myself back in 1975, about 6 years before the scientific evidence emerged, how you could become lucidly aware in the dream state. But I'll tell you, I had an incredible lucid dream, and it just totally blew my mind. And after that, I was hooked on lucid dreaming.
PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, nightmares. How does lucid dreaming help that?
Yeah, one of the primary symptoms of PTSD is recurring nightmares. Every night the person dreams about that horrible incident or a dream representation of it, and they wake up and can hardly fall back asleep. I mean, some of the people don't even want to sleep because they don't want to have those nightmares again. So it happened back in 1982. There is a psychotherapist in Ohio, Gordon Halliday, and he himself, I believe, was a lucid dreamer. And so he instructed his PTSD clients. He said, look, you're going to have that same recurring nightmare again. So at some point in it, I want you to realize, hey, this is that recurring nightmare, and become lucidly aware. And he said, as soon as you do that, then just change one thing in that nightmare. Just change one thing. You know it's a dream, just change one thing. And so both of his clients, they became lucidly aware, they changed one thing, and the most incredible thing is then the recurring nightmares stopped.
Interesting.
After that, they just came to an end, and the people were so glad to be able to get a decent night's sleep and to at least have that aspect of PTSD go away.
Of all the dreams that are out there, the precognitive and things like that, and how many different dreams are there? Can we categorize them?
Wow, there's all kinds of dreams. There's visitation dreams from the deceased. There's dreams of being in other times and places. There are so many types of dreaming. That's one of the fun things that I get to do is every year I get to go to the International Association for the Study of Dreams. They have a conference this year here in a couple of weeks. It's going to be in the Netherlands. And the wonderful thing then, you have all sorts of interesting people come and share either their scientific work on dreaming and lucid dreaming, or sometimes their historical work on dreams and lucid dreams, and as well as their own personal experiences. But there's all types of dreaming.
And here's some that they have out there in terms of some of the dreams. There's obviously what we just talked about, lucid dreams. There's daydreaming, nightmares, recurring dreams, healing dreams, we'll talk about that. Prophetic dreams, that's precognitive, I think. Signal dreams, that's when they solve problems for you. and then epic dreams, or what they would call huge, great dreams. I never heard of that one before. Have you?
You know, I think a lot of people would call those big dreams. That was the term that Carl Jung used. Those big dreams that kind of change your life and send us on a different pathway.
So of all the dreams, of all of them that we just heard, which one would you rather have?
Boy, I would much rather have a lucid dream, because when you're lucidly aware, you can decide what you want to do. And if you know how to do it, you can explore the mind very deeply, explore time and space. You can physically heal, emotionally heal yourself. You can access creativity. Lucid dreaming, I feel, beats almost all these other kind of dreams, hands down.
Tell us about how lucid dreaming can help heal the physical body.
Yeah, you know, there's been some wonderful investigation by Ed Kellogg. Long ago in the 80s, he one time hurt his tonsil and it became infected and inflamed. And so he decided to try and heal it. And so he's going to try to do it in an OBE experience, but he became lucidly aware and he thought, well, I'll just try this lucid dream. So he directed healing energy at his tonsil. And you have to realize that the side of his face was all red and swollen, and it was just really horrible. But he directed healing intent, and I believe he stated when he woke up that he felt 90% better just by directing healing energy, the healing intent, on his infected tonsil. And so that's how it began back in the 1980s, and since then people have really explored physical healing and lucid dreams.
Do you train people to do that?
Oh, yeah. I give online workshops. There are 30-day online workshops at glidewing.com, and give people all the tips and techniques on how to become lucid, but also on how to stabilize the lucid dream and then begin to explore and experiment. And it's amazing what people have done, even in their first 5 or 10 lucid dreams, when they know how to go about it and how to explore and experiment thoughtfully.
What are inner awareness dreams?
Yeah, so the inner awareness, this is something that occurred to me in 1985. I was part of a dream group that was studying. Every month we'd have a task to achieve. And 1 month the task was find out what the dream symbol, the dream figures represent. So that month I became lucidly aware. I followed a woman into an office. I went up to a gentleman and I said, excuse me, what do you represent? And the funny thing, George, instead of the dream figure responding, a voice boomed out a response from above him. And so when I woke up, I thought, well, wait a second. Is there an awareness behind the dream? Is there a larger awareness that you don't see, but it's out there in the dream state? And so after that, I began to ignore the dream figures in my lucid dreams, and I would just shout out questions to my unconscious mind or my larger awareness, like, hey, dream, show me something important for me to see. And then the entire lucid dream would change, or something would appear that was important. So that's when I discovered that there was an awareness behind the dream, and that's why I call my first book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self.
Do these inner dreams sometimes conflict with each other?
You know, what's interesting, the beautiful things about interacting with the larger awareness is sometimes it'll refute your request. There is a woman who runs a big online lucid dreaming forum, LD for All, Pascal, and her group, they decided they were going to find the beginning and end of the universe in a lucid dream.
Did they find it?
You know, she shouted out, show me the beginning and the end of the universe. And this non-visible voice responded, the universe has no beginning and has no end.
I love that. We'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Robert Wagoner with us. We're going to take calls with Robert next hour as we talk about dreams and lucid dreams. Do you interpret dreams, Robert?
You know, I do. I think as we work with dreams and even lucid dreams, sometimes when you ask questions of the larger awareness, the awareness behind the dream, sometimes you get a literal response. It might be verbal, it might be a visual, but sometimes you get a symbolic response. And when you get a symbolic response, it helps if you know a little bit about dream interpretation in order to kind of decide how to go next.
What is your interpretation? What is your take on dreams of the dead? Do they come to see us? What's going on there?
You know, what's interesting is for lucid dreamers, oftentimes they become consciously aware or lucid in the dream state when they just see a deceased family member or a deceased friend. They'll think, wait a second, you know, Uncle Bill's been passed away for 10 years now. This must be a dream. And the wonderful thing then is that they can kind of begin to rationally verify Uncle Bill's status. You know, is he a dream symbol? Is he just a projection of the mind? Or is he something more? Is he possibly the spiritual energy of Uncle Bill coming to visit you in the dream state? And the way they verify it is by asking questions. You know, if you can ask some question and get information outside of your own knowing, then you have some rational basis to think that you might have actually met with your Uncle Bill because he passed on to you something that you did not know, but that later you could verify.
Well, that could be. Now, do they visit us, or are we just dreaming of them?
Yeah, so again, oftentimes you'll read in the reports of people who have recently had someone pass away that they feel like they have dream visitations. There's a wonderful book by Patricia Garfield called Dream Messengers about the departed interacting with the dreamer. And normally it was to just say that they're okay and everything's fine and don't worry. Sometimes it's pass on information. But sometimes, though, I think some of us struggle with our grief. We struggle with our missing the departed. And then we bring them into a dream scenario, just they're kind of a projection of our own thinking.
How can you tell the difference, though, between a visitation of a deceased or it's just a dream?
Yeah, I think probably the only way is the information you get. If they pass on some information that you can later verify, then you have a good basis to know that, oh, that was something more than just a dream symbol. That was more like a true visitation. But there's a wonderful story in one of my workshops. I had a woman who told me that in her family there was a family secret, and she could never figure out what the family secret was all about, because the extended family where they lived in Pennsylvania would all get together each summer and have a big picnic. But she realized that one part of the family went talk to the other part. Then one night, her uncle appeared in a dream.
You still with us?
Her uncle had passed away a few years earlier. And her uncle told her, if you want to figure out the family secret, then you have to go to the county courthouse, go up to this room on the second floor, and ask for this file. And he gave her the numbers of the file. In the morning, she went to the county courthouse. She went up to that room. She asked for the file. They gave her the file, and it was the legal document.
Just laid out the way he said it, right?
Yeah, exactly as he said it. It was the family battle where about 20 years earlier, one part of the family had sold some of the jointly held farmland without getting the approval from the other parts of the family.
How does this happen?
You know, I think it shows that there's more information out there than we consciously possess. But in our dreams, we can have access to it. And sometimes when we're interacting with deceased dream figures and they pass on that kind of information, it shows that there probably is an afterlife. There's an awareness beyond the physical.
Are there case studies that dreams might be proof of the afterlife?
I think this would be a wonderful way that science could investigate things. Have lucid dreamers interact with deceased dream figures and explore that question. In my first book, Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, Ed Kellogg talks about how he did that in his own studies. He would become lucidly aware, and then he would seek out people that had passed away relatively recently that he knew. And here's what he discovered, George. He would oftentimes find the person, but they would be surrounded by things that interested them in their waking life. Like one person had a fascination with telescopes, and so Ed would find him, and he's in this room with all these telescopes. But what was interesting is Ed would often see them as they existed at the height of energy in their life. So you might see them when they're 30 or 40, and at that time they might have a whole different hairstyle and all sorts of things. But when Ed would wake up from the lucid dream, he'd write down all of his notes very carefully, and then often he would talk to the family of the deceased and tell them what he learned from his lucid dream exploration. And frequently the families would verify that Ed did not know this, but their father wore those exact kind of glasses when he was in his 30s, or he had that kind of hairstyle, or yes, in fact, he did have this fascination with telescopes or whatever. And so that would be one way that you could scientifically begin to explore this by using lucid dreamers to seek out deceased people.
What an amazing tool, isn't it?
It really is. The beautiful thing about lucid dreaming is an open platform. You can explore the nature of time and space. You can explore the deceased dream figures. You can just access creativity, solve problems that you might have in the waking life. It's really an open platform, and it allows you to do so much.
Do you also investigate other types of dreams, some of the few that we talked about a few minutes ago?
Oh, yeah. I have an interest in all types of dreaming. Again, I got into dreaming as a young guy because I would have precognitive dreams. Sometimes a voice would announce something, and then the next day it would happen, or someone would say the same exact words. And so that really fascinated me. You know, how can you get information outside of time and space? And so I have a deep interest in all aspects of dreaming.
That's amazing work. We'll take calls next hour with Robert as we talk about lucid dreaming. Where can people get your books, Robert?
You know, they can always find it at the major bookstores or go to Amazon.com. You can check out my books website at lucidadvice.com, and those are the places you can find them. Also, it's nice that the books have been translated into French, German, Chinese, Czech, Finnish, and so you can share them with your friends around the world.
Robert, since you've been doing this, and it's been, 40 years you've been doing this?
Yep, 40 years as a lucid dreamer.
Have you seen any change in attitude about the dream state by people?
You know, as people go deeper into lucid dreaming, and especially as people begin to interact with this awareness behind the dream, it's really a profound moment when you have this non-visible voice respond, give you an idea, show you something, just incredible creativity in moments. So bit by bit, person by person, changes are occurring. And science, of course, is moving along as it does, relatively methodically and slowly. But even there, they're beginning to investigate the nature of dream figures, but by having dream figures do things in lucid dreams.
And
in a lucid dream and come up with a proper response. And so a change is occurring, but it's happening slowly.
When people have been in this kind of state, lucid dreaming state, and how long does it take them, do you think, to realize in the dream that they are in a dream? Does it hit them right away? I mean, what is it that makes them realize they're in a dream?
You know, normally there'll be something phenomenal happen in the dream. So, for example, you might be walking down the sidewalk and there's a mud puddle and you glide across it. You know, it's 10 feet and you just glide across it. And at that moment you think, wait a second, that was too weird. Oh, this must be a dream. So it's whenever you have those moments when something is just way too strange, that's when you realize that, wait a second, this has to be a dream. There's no other explanation. But the problem is, in most dreams, we just accept whatever happened. We're driving a car, and then we're on a motorcycle, then we're on a bicycle, then we're on a, you know, skateboard. We just accept whatever happened. So part of becoming a good lucid dreamer is being more observant and also kind of activating or increasing your critical awareness. You know, asking yourself questions. How can this be? Why did this happen? If you do that more in your waking life, if you become more aware in your waking life, you're just more naturally aware, likely to have lucid dreams.
That's something. And would you say lucid dreaming, of all the dreams out there, that they're your favorite?
Oh, yes. In a lucid dream, when you can ask to experience a concept, that's just a mind-blowing experience. At one of my workshops, I had a young woman who was a university student from Australia. And I asked her why she was in the workshop, and she said, "I study physics here at the university. I want to become an electron in a lucid dream and experience what an electron experiences." And it was so incredible. And that next month, she had five lucid dreams. In each of them, she tried to become an electron. But the thing she had to do was let go of her preconceptions, because you can never have that pure knowledge from the unconscious if you've already muddied it up with your own preconceptions. And finally, by the fifth lucid dream, she became an electron. She experienced the reality of the electron. And one thing that surprised me in her report to the group, she said the thing that was incredible was the joy that an electron felt as it's vectoring around from all these different forces and moving here and there. She said there's such an intense joy. And so it's kind of amazing to think that behind all of this, behind phenomenal reality, that there might be this kind of joyful electron buzz that's propping all of this up.
Have any of your readers sent you any incredible stories about lucid dreaming that you could share with us?
Oh, yeah. I get, especially in my magazine, The Lucid Dreaming Experience, people submit lucid dream stories, and some of them are about healings. Some of them are about interacting with deceased family members who give them information.
I've had a few of them myself, but not a lot, not as much as other kinds of dreams.
Right, right. Well, it's truly fascinating. One gentleman who read my book, he sent in an article to our magazine, and in it he talked about how he healed himself of GERD, which is that gastroesophageal reflex disorder. He said his GERD was so bad that he had to sleep upright in a recliner.
Oh, geez.
That's how bad it was. And so he had tried all the medical doctors and all the medicines, and none of it was working. And when he read my book and realized that people were trying to heal themselves and succeeding in their lucid dreams, he tried it himself. It took two lucid dreams, but he said in the second lucid dream, he could feel the energy coming in to him. And when he woke up, his GERD had been resolved. And so that's the beautiful thing. When people take these ideas into their own specific situation and use it for physical healing or for emotional realizations or accessing creativity, it's truly profound.
That is profound. It's dramatic. Now, what about little children? Do they have lucid dreams?
You know, it's interesting. There was a German researcher, Ursula Voss, who went out to a German school and interviewed 694 school children and asked them, "Have you ever become consciously aware of dreaming while in the dream state?" And she found out that basically 50% could report at least one lucid dream. And as I recall, In 8-year-olds, 20% had already had a lucid dream. But the amazing thing is, in our normal conversation, we just never talk about dreams. We never talk about dreams, never talk about lucid dreams. And so these little kids were already having lucid dreams at age 8, but of course no one had ever asked them about their dream life. And so that's why one thing that I want people to understand, lucid dreaming is natural. It happens all around the world, happens to people naturally. I would say if you surveyed the entire population, about 50% of the people would say, yes, they've had a lucid dream. But there's about 25% who are frequent lucid dreamers. And scientifically, that's people who have more than one lucid dream a month.
Can you lucid dream at will, Robert?
Well, you can lucid dream. You can learn the techniques such that you have increase your chance of lucid dreaming dramatically. So you can get up to that point where if you really had to do it, 3 out of 4 chance you'd have a lucid dream that night. But you've got to learn the techniques and how to approach it.
Robert's websites, lucidadvice.com and dreaminglucid.com, are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His two books, just two right now, right?
That's right. That's right.
Lucid Dreaming, Gateway to the Inner Self, that came out in 2008. Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple, came out in 2015. And I believe that's the book that we talked about when you were on with me in 2015, right?
Right, yeah. Lucid Dreaming, Plain and Simple, is about the tips and techniques on how to become lucid, how to stabilize that lucid dream, and then how to explore and deal with things that you encounter in the lucid dreams.
If we didn't have lucid dreaming, what would we be missing?
We'd be missing a new way to access our unconscious mind. You know, the world has extraordinary problems that are going to require creative solutions. And the beautiful thing in a lucid dream, when you can access that larger awareness, when you can experience concepts directly and dramatically, then you have a new way of accessing the unconscious mind. And so that's what we'd be missing if we didn't have lucid dreams.
We're going to come back in just a moment for a final hour to go with Robert Wagoner, and we will take your phone calls, your stories of lucid dreaming, of precognitive dreams, share those too, and, of course, your questions right here on Coast to Coast AM.